Welcome to Torah to the Nations, where we study the Hebrew roots of our faith. Sponsored by Tree of Life Outlet at Lincoln City Factory Stores.
My earphones are messing up.
Okay, that means we're on the air, James. It's Monday morning,
okay.
So.
Glad, actually, Thursday.
And we don't even have. It's a Monday for me. It's a Monday for me because you weren't here for 2 days. And
I kind of disappeared, didn't I?
You did. You were a ghost.
Well, you know, I actually got the car fixed so I could drive it.
Really?
Yeah, so it was very good days.
Yeah, just to make sure for everybody, it's not really Monday morning. It's only Monday for us because we had 2 days of recorded programs and actually slept in for a day or two. Woohoo.
Yeah, if you've been listening, you've probably gotten to know some history that you would never have known unless you listened to what Stephen M. Collins had to say. And it's really exciting when you think about these people that have been scattered all throughout the world are starting to wake up and starting to come back to a knowledge of who they really are, where they came from, and all these things that he has found. That archaeological finds from Las Lomas, New Mexico, it just blows me away. Stuff about Solomon and all the things that they got for the temple and they brought over, that blows me away. I mean, go back 3,000 years and the Hebrews were in America.
Right. That was one of the things that I thought was the most interesting, that the land, the country, current-day country of Brazil, if you take the consonants, the B-R-Z-L, and then add on the vowels, it's still named Brazil today, and that's the word for iron. I mean, what an incredible thing. So anyway, what we've been doing, we've had Stephen Collins on for the last 2 days, and now he is going to be live. And that's what we want to do, is have people
so
call in
at
503-316-1220. And is Stephen on with us yet? Or we're just headed that direction. All right, that's fine. All right, so not only are we going to talk with Stephen Collins next week, we're going to be talking with
Jim and Penny Caldwell. Jim and Penny were the people that he mentioned on the show the day before yesterday. They actually lived in Saudi Arabia, and they were able to actually experience and take pictures of and really go out to the real Mount Sinai, the one that was fenced off, the one that actually shows the burnt rock on top of it, has the altar that has the petroglyphs on it. They were able to see all this firsthand and actually go in there and camp with their children, experience it, pick up arrowheads that actually the Israelites had left behind when they were living there for almost a year. So the whole process of verifying that information, because he was working for a Saudi Arabia oil company, they were out there and they were able to get tons and tons of footage and information. And they're going to be on the air with us. They've been on television all over the United States, all over the world, about this information, verifying the true Mount Sinai. Not the one that is in
Turkey.
Egypt.
Oh,
Mount Sinai.
Was there one in Egypt, too?
Yeah. The one that's in the Sinai Peninsula. Yeah.
Well, the reason that even came up is because Stephen Collins has gone back and researched the pharaohs. And the modern Egyptologists say that, we look at the Ten Commandments movie with Ramses in it, and we get this idea that it was a different dynasty of Egyptian rulers. But if you go back historically, it was someone who meets up with these columns and the Sinai crossing and
everything
and all
fits.
That in Saudi Arabia.
Everything fits. Yeah. And that alone is exciting. But also Tim Mahoney, who did Mahoney Media, he also is doing a movie that's going to be sent out worldwide. Actually, it's going to be a world-class movie in the theaters, like a regular movie, and it's going to go over all this information. They've been working on this movie for about 7 or 8 years. I talked to him yesterday, and the Exodus files, the stuff that they've, you know, the filming of the Red Sea crossing, the underwater chariot parts, all the things that Leonard Moeller has done and Jim and Penny have done, that Ron Wyatt first found, is all coming to the surface in this day and hour. So it's pretty exciting time.
And, of course, on Monday, we have Monty on Mondays in March.
Exactly.
So, all right, we've got Stephen Caldwell, or rather Stephen Collins.
Blah, blah, blah.
Stop it, Don. You know, I cannot take a day off, because if I do, I come back like this, a blithering idiot. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. Good morning to you. Shalom.
Shalom.
Well, we've been pretty excited about the response. People are looking forward to getting your books out here, and we've had some calls in. And I'll start out with this question from a caller. Now, do we need to go into any more background, Jim? You think people have been listening enough that we...
I think we need to summarize a little bit.
Long and the short of the story is when the tribes were divided, the northern tribes from the southern tribes, Jeroboam and Rehoboam in the nation of Israel, the ten northern tribes were called Israel. They were dispersed into nations going north, south, east, and west, primarily going north, but also every place. And so what Stephen has done is he's gone back and documented this historical fact of who Israel has been that's been dispersed into the nations. And that's what our conversation has been over the last 2 days. So today people have questions, and the number to call in is 503-316-1220. The first question that I have, do you want to keep going from there?
No, that's fine. Let's go ahead.
First question I have is, I was born in Germany. Before my parents could get married, they had to prove they were blood Aryans, Yaki, etc. Now Stephen is saying that the people of Germany may really be of Hebrew descent. Does that mean I'm a Hebrew? Yay. And does that mean that I could make Aliyah? Ha ha. So there you are. That's the first question.
Okay, well, there's two parts to it. I'll answer the latter part first, where it talks about making Aliyah. That's a separate issue.
Yes.
That's covered under the jurisdiction of the Israeli government because it's their sovereign territory. You know, Zephaniah 2 said the remnant of Judah, that's the Jews, would have a promised kingdom in the old promised land or nation in the latter days here, and that was fulfilled in 1948. And since they're the ones that control the rules on Aliyah, that's something that God would have to open the door for anything other than what they allow now for Aliyah, where you have to prove Jewish descent and so forth. So that I would have to defer to the Israeli authorities. And the first part of the question was, can Germans be Hebrews, etc.? The answer is yes. In fact, the biblical term Hebrew really comes from the man who was named Eber. His consonants, Eber, turned into the Hebrews or the Hebrews, and all the descendants of Abraham are Hebrews, not just the Jews. Remember, Abraham was promised to have many, many nations that would descend from him, and the Jews, the Israelis, are just one small nation of that. As we discussed in the other two programs and the information in my book presents, many of the nations of Europe have descended from the House of Israel, and the nations that have been founded from nations of Europe, like the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, they came from the Anglo-Saxons who bore the name of Isaac upon them, which God said in Genesis 21:12 would always be on the birthright descendants. But in my book, I identify the Germans as primarily, in our modern world, the tribe of Gad. In Genesis 49, the Lord gave us clues about each of the tribes of Israel and what their characteristics or traits would be in the latter days that we're living in. And Gad is just a very short prophecy about them, but it says there in the wording will vary in the biblical translation you're using, but it says that Gad will be overcome by a troop or a troop of nations, but that he would rise and recover at the end. So this is all in the latter-day context. So the tribe of Gad is a nation which has to be overcome by an alliance. Really, overcome by a troop of nations mean you're invaded and subjugated. That happened to Germany in World War II. And as we know, we were in the latter days in 1948, because that's when Zephaniah 2 was fulfilled. That's when Germany was completely occupied in four different occupation zones after World War II. But Germany has risen to be very powerful economically and it's really the heart in the heart of Europe and is the strength of the EU Eurozone. And so that prophecy has been fulfilled that they've been recovered. But they alone among the nations of Europe were we really have to look for, because that's where the Parthians and Scythians, who were the ten tribes grown great after their exile, migrated to. It's Germany that was overcome by a troop of nations, and also Germany has the name of Isaac on it, which is overlooked by many people. The Anglo-Saxons were just one branch of what the Romans called the Germanic or Gothic people. These names were used somewhat interchangeably. But really, English, Danish, Norwegian, German, other languages have all come from that same Germanic common root of these migrating Israelites that came into Israel, or excuse me, from Israel into Asia and then into Europe. But Germany, in the German language, some of its provinces or Länder in the German still have the name of Isaac upon them. We, in English, it comes out as, you know, Upper Saxony or Lower Saxony. But in the German language, Saxon has a C in it, Sachsisch, where it's S-A-C, the same exact name of Isaac that was on the Sacae Scythians that came out of Asia. And Roman historians and Roman writers related that the Scythian people were completely transformed as they migrated in, called Germans, when they came into Europe, because that was in the Roman sphere, so that's what the Germans called them. They were called Scythians and Sacae when they were in the Greek sphere, and the Greeks interacted them with them prior to the rise of Rome. So the answer is yes. Not just Germans, but many people of Europe are Israelites. And also, even in Eastern or Balkan Europe, there are nations which have descended, I believe, from Abraham's union with Keturah. Remember, he gave birth to the Edomites, the Ishmaelites, which I believe are the Arabs, the Israelites through Sarah, and the nations that descended through that, through Isaac and Jacob. But he also had a wife named Keturah, and he bore many, many sons from them. And it also says in Genesis that he also had concubines with many sons that he sent away to the east, nations there that rose from him. So Abraham has many nations scattered in all directions on the earth. And in my blogs on my website, I go into some of those other nations, and I won't take time up in any more in this answer, so more questions can be answered.
All right.
Go ahead. Well, the reason I was thinking about myself, the question, I want to really be able to, because I was on your website quite a bit, and I want to go into some of the prophecy information that you have on there, but I don't want to interrupt this train of thought. I want to make sure everybody out there knows that they can call in and we can have you on the board asking questions.
We are live.
We've
got the telephone system back up.
Yay.
So everybody can call in and actually talk to us today.
So 503-316-1220, and we can actually put your questions right with Stephen. Stephen has spent 30, 35 years of his life doing this. This is a wealth of information you do not want to pass up. You want to make sure you get on the phone, ask him any of these questions. If you don't know your identity, if you don't know who you are yet, you need to call in and ask some questions. This will help you find out who you are.
Well, you know, and it's not for me, it's not even as much about our physical bloodline as it is about we're being restored through the blood of Yeshua. Our first identity is through Jesus, through Yeshua. And all this does, knowing our physical identity, is it fills out the Bible. It makes it fuller so that we understand, you know, there wasn't just a piece of history here, a piece of history there. And, oh, by the way, God decided to pay attention to us again in the end times. He's always had his eye on us from generation to generation to generation.
Well, that again, is one of the things that I love about this. This proves the Bible is a real historical document, that it's accurate, that it has information, like the information that you've brought up, Stephen, about the archaeological things that you've found and that people have found all over the world that establish this information. Again, the Word of God is a historical information source. It really has the truth. And when you see that, you can start believing the whole context of it. People have trouble believing that there was really a Red Sea crossing, for example, that the water opened up, the chariots were swallowed up, and they're now still left there. Stuff like that really documents that these things are true. And I think it's great that you have those points in the book. It
Stephen,
helps people.
One of the things that we want to clarify, too, is that we're not just talking about these people that came up to the north, but there were Hebrews all over the world even before this because of the colonization. Afghans, people from India, even into South America, Mexico, as we mentioned, Brazil in the early parts of the show. This domination of Hebrews is something that isn't new, but it has been hidden.
Yes, it has been hidden, and really Daniel 12 has a prophecy that knowledge will increase greatly in the latter days, and I believe that's not just the technological, high-tech knowledge that we're experiencing right now, but it's also going to be a restoration of the knowledge of Yahweh, God, and His truth, and that His people will come to an awareness of who they are, and the relevance and the power, the authority of the Bible will be made known. You mentioned India, you mentioned Afghanistan, I'll mention something on that too. Obviously, when the Parthians and Scythians were in Asia, the Israelites spread as far as western China. There have been a number of stories in National Geographic on cable TV about mummies that have been found that are Caucasians. They have blonde hair, red hair, blue eye, had blue eyes. Their DNA and even their clothing patterns were like the tartan cloth of the Scots and so forth, where the Scythians spread very far and wide. And so these records of these mummies that have been found in the western Chinese regions show that the Caucasian Israelites had spread that far before the hand of the Lord really started pushing them back in toward Europe, to where he wanted them in the latter days, because he knew where they'd have to be to fulfill his prophecy.
We're going to take a short break here where we're going to let people call in. Be sure to call in at 503-316-1220, and we're going to be back with Stephen M. Collins. And Stephen, I really want to give people some insight on what could be coming and what you've seen in Ezekiel and some of the other things as you come back. And we're back with you with Torah to the Nations. We got so carried away. We're having so much fun here. We forgot we were on the air.
I know. We do that all the time. It's because we have that darn near perfect show every day.
I know. Well, Stephen, the phone's ringing now, but while we've got a little minute, I know that you've done a couple of teachings. I've heard the one you have on the Internet about Ezekiel 37 and 38 and how those things are starting to line up and play out. We've had Monty on lately, and he's talking about the 62 weeks and how that there could be a possibility that we could even see some of this stuff coming in the very near future. How do you line up on any of these topics, especially Ezekiel?
Well, first a correction. It's Ezekiel 38 and 39 that has the prophecy of the Gog Magog end time prophecy that I'm talking about, rather than 37, 38 that I write about. But I would agree that we could be on the very edge of major biblical fulfillments. And Ezekiel 38 is a very pivotal prophecy. Many in Christendom see that it's a latter day prophecy, and many people. You know, the Hal Lindsey and other evangelicals, many people can see that the Gog-Magog alliance is taking place and forming right in front of our eyes right now. Because when you look at the nations mentioned in Ezekiel 38, and I'll just mention it briefly, but you can see that this is Russia, China, Iran, the Kushites, the people, and Kush is a name that's the Hindu Kush Mountains, you know, in Afghanistan and Pakistan, where Al-Qaeda, the Taliban are. It names the enemies of the United States and the enemies of the Western nations in this area as an alliance that's rising. And it says in the latter days, they are going to militarily attack the nations of Israel. Now, most Christians or believers that don't understand the two-house concept or where the 10 tribes of Israel are, they see the name Israel there, and they think it's that little Jewish nation in the Mideast, that all these nations are going to come against the Israelis, and that we in America are going to sit here and watch it all on cable TV and munch, you know, grill steaks and eat popcorn and watch it while this war takes place. That's completely fallacious. What's going to happen is it's Judah, remember, is the Jews and Israelis. Judah isn't even mentioned in Ezekiel 38 and 39. This isn't a prophecy about the Israelis at all. It's a prophecy about what's going to happen to the nations of the 10 tribes of Israel, or as they're called, the House of Israel, in this two-chapter prophecy, Ezekiel 38 and 39. So the targets of Gog and Magog's alliance is going to be the United States, the English nations, the Scandinavian, the European nations, the NATO nations, and all their allies around the world. So we can see that the United States is steadily growing weaker. Our military is being dissipated in Iraq and Afghanistan. Our economy is being undermined. Our dollar is being undermined. We have not upgraded our military. We're expending it and exhausting our armies. We have very little to defend our homelands. And what Ezekiel 38 says is that this military alliance of Russia, China, and Iran will invade our homelands. And in verse 11 of 38, it says we are going to be dwelling, really in a fool's paradise. King James says safely, but really another translation for that says carelessly. And that we're dwelling without walls. You know, if you've seen the Lord of the Rings movies or Kingdom of Heaven or some of these, you understand how important a city wall was to keep out an invading army in ancient times. When you apply this to modern times, we have neglected our defenses of our own homeland. In verse 15, it says this invasion will come out of the north, which in the Cold War, we always expected that Russia would invade out of the north, coming over the pole. But it's clearly showing that there's going to be a literal invasion, and it wouldn't be that hard for the Russians and Chinese and others to seize airports in the, at some point in the years in the future. And I can't put a year on this because I don't know when the Lord will decide to fulfill this. But they could easily seize airfields throughout Alaska and start a 24/7 airlift of Chinese and Russian armor and troops into Alaska and just send them south, coming out of the north into Canada and the United States. The same would apply to Europe because much Russian power is in the Kola Peninsula by Murmansk, where they could come down through Scandinavia, attack England from the north. Russian forces are in Kaliningrad in the northern edge of the European mainland that they can attack from, too. So, and it says this will happen in the latter days, but it does give us a message of hope that it says that the Lord is going to intervene in this war, and he's, when we're at the point of being defeated and occupied, his presence comes to the earth. In verse 20, there's a great earthquake. He intervenes in the war, and five-sixths of the invaders die, and really then we have the messianic age, or the millennium, as some would prefer the term, coming into pass and being founded. And so this is just ahead of us. The book of Revelation is a parallel chapter in chapter 16 where it says the kings of the east are going to be invading the nations in the west and coming out of the east, that's Asia, which is where Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, the Taliban, these people are, and they will be attacking westward. Now, we also know that the Israelis are part of the Western Alliance of Nations and of the tribes of that have come from Jacob, the man Israel. They're Judah, but they're still Israelites, just like all the other Israelite tribes. And we know they're going to be attacked simultaneously, and Zechariah 14 shows that war in progress when the Messiah comes and stands on the Mount of Olives and intervenes in the middle of this global world war, just as he does in Ezekiel 38 and intervenes as well. So since this alliance of Gog-Magog is clearly being put together, they're militarizing themselves like crazy. China is rising as a military power, arming Iran. It's Russia that's given them their nuclear reactor. And Russia's inventing new classes of military weapons. Most Americans don't realize they have a supersonic cruise missile called the Sizzler, which is invented for the sole purpose of destroying our aircraft carriers, which it's not clear whether our aircraft carriers can defend themselves against supersonic cruise missiles because they were designed really in Ronald Reagan's presidency to have defenses against subsonic cruise missiles. And the Chinese Navy has already been equipped with these same missiles, and we don't know if they've placed them in Iran as well to fire at our warships there if there's a war that breaks out with Iran. So we're really living on the fumes of our past prosperity and the grace that Yahweh or God gave our land, and we are in great danger right now. But as it's prophesied in Ezekiel 38, we don't perceive it as a country. We just think we're going to go on and nothing bad's going to happen, but these end-time events will come as a snare, as it says in Luke, upon us suddenly, just like being trapped in them, and we'll be swept up into a latter-day fulfillment that we are not ready for as a nation. So with that, I'll ask for the next question.
Now, there is another school of thought that America will eventually become part of a 70-nation group that will challenge the land of Israel. And you've heard that part before, that the United States is, you know, the whore of Babylon and all this kind of stuff. Your position is that it's not based on tribal lineage. Is that right?
Not based on what?
Tribal lineage.
Well, the I'm not familiar with a 70-nation thing coming against Israel, but it does say in Zechariah 12, verse 3, I believe, that God or Yahweh will defend Judah and Jerusalem, though all the nations of the earth come against them. But I really see the Israelis as being part of the Western alliance that is attacked in Ezekiel 38 in this latter-day period ahead of us. I certainly hope that is how the way prophecy is fulfilled.
Exactly. All right. Another question is: Stephen mentioned the number 13 as prevalent in the U.S. and its founding, etc. My understanding has always been that the number 13 is closely tied to the occult and to witchcraft, and many people have come out of have said that the number 13 is very strong in occultic teachings. and very important to that. How was it's a good number for the United States, but it's also an occultic number, I guess. And I've heard that before too. How do you rectify both of those?
Well, keep in mind, our Creator has designed original truths in every possible aspect of life, and the world of mathematics is just one of those aspects of life. The enemy will warp and pervert God's original truth so that it has a wicked or perverse meaning or application. And he will twist it, take good, and turn it into an evil. But in this particular case, it's clearly God himself in the book of Genesis, that when he expanded the original 12 tribes into 13, it was Manasseh's portion to be grandfathered in as the 13th tribe, along with Ephraim, because Ephraim had the right hand of Jacob on his head, so that was the 12th portion, the primary blessing. But Manasseh was included as the 13th tribe. And, of course, we had 13 colonies, 13 stripes in our original flag, and our flag today, our national crest, has 13 all over it. And in my book, I point that out on Israel's Tribes Today on page 183, for those who have the book, the discussion of how 13. Isn't it an interesting act deception that what God meant for good is sometimes taken by the enemy and twisted for evil, as 13 is considered an unlucky number in our culture, you know, Friday the 13th. I've even heard of buildings that don't have a 13th floor because people are so superstitious about it. But it is God who created all the numbers in the mathematical system. None of them are, you know, there are certain meanings that can be associated with ones, but it's the Bible itself that stamped a good meaning on 13, and identifying Manasseh as the 13th tribe when the 12 were expanded to 13, because Jacob gave a double portion to Joseph. And so the original truth is that 13 is actually a good number in the Bible for Manasseh. There's nothing in the biblical scriptures that would identify 13 as having any evil connotation on it at all. So the scriptures don't label it as 13 being evil. It's the enemy side, which is warping and perverting numbers, as the occult will do to give a incorrect message to mankind.
Well, that's really good, because, you know, the prophecies that, you know, a lot of people I've talked to over these, especially over the last 10 or 15 years, most people have not seen a lot of how the USA is in prophecy, and I think you really show that. I know that that part of it with the 13, but the United States is definitely in the prophecy. Can you speak a little bit more about how that we are definitely in some of these different chapters that's laid out for us?
Yes, I'm happy to. I have a great deal on this on the lead article, The USA and Bible Prophecy, on my homepage at my website, www.stephenmcollins.com. However, in Ezekiel 38, it mentions that the nations of Israel that are attacked, and the dominant description of one is that it will be, in verse 8, it says it's a nation that is gathered out of many people. So it has to be a melting pot nation that has been assimilated from many immigrants. And it's the United States which has been referred to as a melting pot nation. Also, there's parallel prophecies to this. In verse 17, it says, God says that he has other prophecies about this same event that he's already given to previous prophets before Ezekiel lived. Well, you go back, Joel is one of those. And in Joel 2, it talks about a great invasion from out of the north. A northern army is attacking the people of Israel. Same theme as in Ezekiel 38. And there it says, when the people cry out for deliverance, Yahweh intervenes, and he sends his invincible army from heaven and intervenes in human affairs, just as Ezekiel 38 says. And at that particular point, there's a remarkable scripture where it says that he will destroy that northern army that's attacking, and he will drive them into the eastern and uttermost sea. So the land that is attacked has to be a land that is a land from sea to shining sea, you might say, with a western and an eastern ocean or body of water bordering the entire eastern and western border. That fits the United States geography. And it also fits all the nations of Ephraim, because Ephraim and Manasseh jointly had the name Israel placed on them in Genesis 48. If you look at all the nations that are the company of nations that Ephraim was told or prophesied to be, Great Britain, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, all of them have bodies of water completely covering their eastern and western borders. So that fits them just as well as the United States. So it fits both the modern tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. And it's really quite fascinating how the details of the Bible and its prophecies totally come alive in our modern world, is completely congruent with our modern geopolitics when you understand where the modern nations are in the modern world.
Yeah, that really makes a difference. I know that we've had Henry Groover on, and he's talked about visions that he's had. I don't know if you've ever listened or seen what Henry has talked about. He's a prayer walker that's walked all over the world praying for city after city.
And I'm aware of him, yes.
And some of his is definitely showing that in the latter days, in the days that we will see coming, that the United States is going to have some devastating attacks. And I know Dietrich Duderman, and there's been other people that have brought these messages to America in warnings over the years. And I think America just kind of sleeps right through it, hadn't seen the truth.
We do, and I'm familiar with Duderman's prophecies as well, too, and they're completely consistent with really what we see in the prophecies in Ezekiel 38, Joel 2, Revelation 16, Jeremiah 30, and others. Now, one other interesting evidence on the United States being part of the descendants of the 10 tribes of Israel. This was once known so well by some people in the United States that, it, as my book points out, in 1860 there was a pastor named Pitts was his name, but he was invited to give a two-session address to a joint session of the United States Congress in 1860 to, or 1859, just before the Civil War. And he was given that opportunity to present the evidence that the United States was descended from the 10 tribes of Israel, that it was modern Israel or modern Zion. And he didn't have anywhere near as much information available to him as what I have in my books, but just based on the evidence at that time, he had come to the conclusion that the United States had to be the regathered Israel and in the modern world. Can you imagine in our modern world? This shows how much our culture has changed since 1860, when the Bible was esteemed in our culture. Where a pastor could present evidence like that to a joint session of Congress, can you imagine what it would be like, what a change would have to occur for in our world today, our Congress, to sit down and listen to an evidence that we're the house of Israel in the end times, and to hear these things expounded from the Scriptures as the Congress in 1860 received? So this isn't me, Steve Collins, coming up with this idea. This has been known in our nation before and even presented to a joint session of Congress. So this is knowledge which has been simmering under the surface, but it just hasn't come to a full boil where the nation becomes aware of it. And I'm certainly hoping that in these latter days, the nation will, and all the nations descended from Abraham, will wake up to their heritage and their identity and see themselves as friends and allies in this end time.
Stephen, we're going to take our last break here, but I guess in a lot of ways it doesn't matter at all if we are the physical descendants, because we can still be of the bad seed. Honestly, we can be those who are not washed in the blood of Yeshua. And even though we are a nation that has descended from there, at the same time, we still have to have the blood of Yeshua to make us part of the kingdom of Israel to come.
So, oh, you're absolutely correct. We are one in Christ or one in Yeshua, and it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever what a person's background, whether they're Israelite or from Abraham or a Gentile that is not from Abraham. They don't have to be a Hebrew. One of my favorite expressions is that Christ or Yeshua is an equal opportunity Savior. He came to save everyone. He sent the disciples and apostles to every nation, to the uttermost parts of the earth, and to teach all nations. He didn't exempt any of them. He said to teach all nations these truths.
That's right.
So anybody can come to Yeshua, and they're grafted in by faith in Yeshua as seed of Abraham anyway.
You can call in at 503-316-1220. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes.
And we're back with you, Torah to the Nations, around the world on JCTown.com, also on Geo Media Network. So we're
nice
broadcasting
job
all over the place. And we've had a couple of callers. One called in that is really somebody that has come to an understanding of their Hebrew roots, been listening to our station now for 6 or 7 months. And I want to just tell a little story about this person. This person has had such dramatic change in their life that she is literally believing the word to the point where she's being tested on all angles. She was the other day had somebody that asked her for her shoes. And she thought, well, if they ask for my shoes, I better give them my socks too. But then when she started, it was her favorite pair of shoes, one of them. And she said, I mean, this actually happened to her. Mm-hmm. Somebody offered, she turned, went back and called me up and said, what do you think I should do? I said, well, I think you should do what your heart tells you to do. And we talked a little bit. And she went back up the door and said, listen. And she had me on the phone and she gave her shoes, went back to her car barefoot. That, you know, she's attempting to walk in obedience to the Father in every way. I think that's totally exciting. That's and good. She has really been blessed by your teaching, Steve, and she wanted to let you know. She called in and said, thanks, Steve, so much for your diligence to serve the great King. And we had another, like Grandma Catherine, actually, and I probably shouldn't mention her name, but she prays for us so much, and she has a group of prayer warriors. And if there's any specific prayers, you can let us know, and we'll make sure we get those to her, and she will lift them to the Father for you, Stephen.
Okay.
And she also wanted to know if you know of David Barton's Wall Builders group, and I'm not sure the relationship, you know, exactly what the connection is there, but we asked.
Well, I have heard of them, but I couldn't speak with any specificity about them. I'm only aware of them. I don't know what the central point of their mission is, and I haven't been involved with them, so I probably better not comment.
I think
on,
it has something to do with the biblical,
you know,
roots.
Organization I don't know about.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, I have a verse that I'd like to ask your input on, and it's Deuteronomy 32:8, and it is, when the Most High gave nations their heritage and split up the sons of man, he set the borders of nations to parallel the number of Israel's descendants. That's amazing to me, that when the nations were laid out, we actually, God actually put in the number of Israelites in those nations based on, made the borders based on the number of Israelites.
That is a very interesting verse, and I think you've applied it rightly. The that verse does say that, and it makes sense, because the Creator made a covenant with Abraham and said that his nations would be the preeminent nations of the earth, so they were given the best portions, the best areas where there's natural resources, where there's agricultural bounty, mineral wealth, good places for trade, access to coastlands. All of these places, the good portions of the earth, were given to the descendants of Abraham, and especially to Ephraim and Manasseh's descendants, who had the lion's share of the birthright of Abraham's covenant. So the other nations that were not part of Abraham's covenant got what was left after Yahweh had given the best parts to Abraham. Now, there's some interesting things in verse 32, or chapter 32 also, if you go down a little bit. In that same prophecy, it mentions, and it's referring to the Abrahamic covenant in verse 13, where he made his people to ride on the high places of the earth. And if you back up to verse 11, it refers to 10:11. It says God keeps his people as the apple of his eye. And it says, as an eagle stirreth up her nest and flutters over her young, spreads her wings, takes them, bears them on her wings. So that eagle is associated as a symbol of God's people among the nations. And the eagle, of course, is the symbol of the United States of America. It's on our crest, an eagle. And that was, the eagle was the symbol of, very common symbol of the Scythian Sake in Asia. And there's various eagles that are symbols of the royal houses of Europe as well, that are Israelite nations. So
it's interesting you'd bring that up, Steve, because, you know, Don said, well, I wonder what my portion was for Torah. I said, well, let's look it up. So we found that his birthday and when he was born just happens to be Deuteronomy chapter 32. So this information is kind of interesting for him, for sure.
And, well, interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I think he's a king about to happen or something like that.
I don't know about that. But, well, you know, the eagle has, we have Frank on the line. I want to get to him in just a second. But the eagle has been used by a lot of, in about a lot of bad situations, by the Romans and by the Nazis as well. So, you know.
Yes, it does. Well, that's another case like the number 13. I mean, depending on if it's in God's hand, it will have a good use and fulfill His prophecies. If it has, but the enemy will corrupt virtually anything in this creation that comes from God to try to turn it into an evil use. So that certainly has happened as well.
The number here is 503-316-1220. You can call in just like Frank did. Hi, Frank.
Hi there. Frank here out in Elmsville, and I'm listening to your program. I was a member of the Worldwide Church of God for 20 years. I've got the United States and British Commonwealth and Prophecy articles, and I also know that that was copied from another book, Judas After Joseph's Birthright. And I've got all of your books, Stephen, Israel, Tribes Today, Parthia. I've got The Origins of Empire, the Ancient Israel, Israel's Lost Empire. And I was talking to Carlton Smith down in southern part of California here the other day. He was a minister in a worldwide church, and I was telling him about these books and how you can get more proof on it. He was real interested in
getting. You have a question for
I gave him the names. But one thing I was wondering, you know, in the book of Romans, the 11th chapter, it talks about, in the 25th verse, it says, "For I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of the mystery, lest you should be wise in your own conceit, that blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so all Israel shall be saved. As it is written, there shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob." I won't read any more, but anyway, it's talking about Israel there. And I've always wondered about, when it talks about Israel, is that just talking about the 10 tribes, or is it talking about Judah also?
Well, you have to, the context has to govern. Sometimes when it talks about the whole house of Israel in a prophecy or a scripture, it will include Judah. But usually Israel just means the 10 tribes, and I think it does in this context, because the Jews, the tribe of Judah, they have not been blinded to who they are. They know they're Israelites.
Absolutely.
They know they're the tribe of Judah, so they've never been blinded on that fact.
Uh-huh.
It's the 10 tribes of Israel that were blinded to their heritage, and that was also prophesied in Hosea, that they would be among the Gentiles, they would lose their identity, they would lose the track of who they are, and it's really only in the end times that this realization would come back to them. So I think we're living in that times when God is beginning to stir that up, and more people in the 10 tribes of Israel are realizing who they are.
Let me add to that a little bit, Frank.
Do you think that the two witnesses will have anything to do with that?
Well, let me talk to your first question first, though, because we have to remember that both houses of Israel have been blinded. Okay, so we've got, yes, Israel is used there as a reference to the 10 tribes, but I believe it's also that Judah has been blinded to their Messiah. So while they understand their identity as Israel, they don't understand their fulfilled identity as Israel. So
you're
go ahead.
You're absolutely correct. Judah is aware of the identity and heritage of Israel, that they're an Israelite tribe, but the 10 tribes lost that awareness. But you make the point very well, that the 10 tribes, generally, that's where Christianity was seated and where Christ Yeshua was accepted as a Savior, but the Jews were blinded, and indeed it said he would be rejected by his own tribe rejected him that way. But keep in mind, this is going to come to a union in the very end of this,
exactly,
our age, because
yeah,
Ezekiel 37 has a prophecy about a two sticks prophecy, that when David is resurrected, so that's clearly the time of the resurrection of the dead, that at that particular time there's going to be a full union of Israel and Judah that will come together as one again, and they'll be under one ruler, David, who will be under Yeshua or Christ. And at that particular time, the respective blindnesses of Israel and Judah will be removed, and they will come into a complete unity where we, meaning the 10 tribes of Israel, will understand what Judah's understood all along, that they are part of Israel, and also that the Jews have held Torah law in many of their cultural customs that Israel forgot. But also the tribe of Judah will then have its mind open to realize who the Messiah is, and that's prophesied specifically in Zechariah 12, where it says when the Messiah comes, Judah's going to be shocked as to who he is. And this is in their own Tanakh saying this, that they will, you know, they will weep and fast and dedicate themselves to serve him, and that the Messiah is the one whom they have pierced. So that's a perfect reference to Yeshua or Christ being nailed to the cross and having the spear driven into him. that the Sanhedrin put the Romans up into doing at that particular time. So, no, you've made a very good point on that, and I agree completely with you.
Now, Stephen, in Ezekiel 37, when the two sticks do become united, do you see a particular time that is going to happen in a way that we could kind of see that in a time frame at all?
Well, I'll have to give you speculation because I claim no revelation on this.
No, I know.
I have to look at the scriptures and see that it is going to happen, but we do have the clue in Ezekiel 37 because it starts in verse 15, goes to the end of the chapter. David, it says, will be king over them, and he's going to be an everlasting prince, so he's clearly resurrected to eternal life, as the faith chapter in Hebrews says he will be. So Ezekiel 37, the two sticks prophecy, is specifically after Yeshua returns, David and all the saints are resurrected, where there will be a complete fullness between Judah and Joseph. Those tribes will become one. Now, if you go through the rest of Ezekiel, it gives many messianic prophecies for the messianic age or millennium. And later in, I believe it's the last chapter of Ezekiel, it shows that all 12 of the tribes will be back in the land, and that it will be arranged so that each tribe will have an inheritance in the promised land, and it'll probably be a lot bigger in terms of its borders in the modern nation of the Israelis. But so it's very clear that there's going to be a return to the land of all, of at least contingents from all of the tribes of Israel back to that land. But one, I don't think all of them are coming back there. I think contingents will come back because they're really the descendants of Abraham were to be as the dust of the earth, the sand of the sea in numbers, so there's no way that land would hold them all. If you look at the reign of King Solomon, when Solomon was really a type of the reign of Yeshua or Christ on the earth, when the law went forth from Zion and Jerusalem was a world capital and there was righteousness and knowledge and peace on the earth, that really was an earlier pointing to the ultimate prophecy of when Yeshua will reign from Jerusalem. That'll be the world capital. It'll be a time of peace. And at that particular time, as it's very clear from my book, all the Israelites did not live in the promised land. They sent colonies and contingents of their people all over the earth. They spread to the east, west, north, and south. They had colonies in Europe, Spain, England, Ireland, the New World, Carthage in North Africa. They had many colonies around the world that they had also settled and that their people fled to when the Assyrians came in the final invasion. So if that, you know, if past is prologue, I think that that also shows that while there will be the headquarters nation of Israel with people from all the tribes there in the promised land, they will also be throughout the world and inhabiting the same nations that they inhabit today.
All right, Stephen, hey, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Stephen. This has been great information.
It's really been good.
And we got those books on the way. Thank you for that, too, Stephen. We'll have some here at the station, or you can go to his website and order them, but we'll have...
Those will be to us tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Yeah,
so we can get your orders in today, call 503-316-1220. Whoever answers the phone will be able to help you. There are four books. And we want to make sure that these are all available to you. They're discounted from what you can get them out at the website. We want to make sure that you get the best deal possible, and it also helps the ministry out a little bit.
Yeah, and it'd be great. Thank you so much again, Stephen. We appreciate it. Maybe we'll be able, when your health is better, get you out here sometime. Do some live stuff. It'd be wonderful.
All right. And tomorrow we have... Rabbi Ralph Messer.
Well, actually, we have Marcy Marone, Moran. I'll get it right. Marcy's flying in actually today, and she's going to be in the studio live. She's going to be teaching some of the wonderful things she's learned at different fellowships around, preparing the way for the conference that we're going to have with Ralph. So we're going to have some exciting time with Marcy here tomorrow.
We also have something we need to talk about right away and do something about it. Tony Robinson coming in here in 2 weeks.
Oh, yes. Tony Robinson.
Oh, I forgot, huh?
No, Tony, he's coming. We haven't arranged it for him to come to
Salem yet?
To Salem.
Okay.
He's arranged to go to Portland, and that'll be an all-day conference, which we want to really get people there. Tony, we've had him on the air.
That's going to be Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be a Saturday. Now, on the 19th, we got to make sure that we have some other things for Tony to do. If you've not listened to Tony, you don't want to miss hearing him. Go to our website, T2TN, and plug Tony, and you can listen to him. So we want to be ready for tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be a great, exciting day. Talk to you soon. Here's the Father's name on all of you. Oh, we don't have it.
Today's program has been brought to you in part by Tree of Life Outlet at Lincoln City Factory Stores.